Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcome you back to the show this week. And as always, I hope wherever you and your loved ones are, you are safe, you are healthy, and you are managing well in these very scary and uncertain times. And yes, there is news in Formula One, and like everything else, it has to do with the broader implications of everything that is going on in the world, as the global state of things is basically ground to a halt as we all deal with the coronavirus pandemic, and hopefully it will end sooner than rather than later. But the effects have been profound and they have been far reaching. And of course, Formula One, although it has the appearance of an ivory tower most of the time, is not immune to these sorts of things either. And it could be very, very different once it is all over, as many other aspects of life might well as be, of course. Anyways, the business side of Formula One is way beyond my expertise and knowledge, so to help bring some insight and some clarity into the situation as to what might unfold with Formula One in the short and medium term is Christian Silt, who along with Carolyn Reed is one of the founders of Formula Money. And they specialize in the writing about the business side of Formula One and have been doing so for more than 15 years. They are the only journalists worldwide who regularly write about Formula One for national media, and every year their work is published in many well-known publications, including the Daily Telegraph, The Guardian, The Independent, and many more. Christian and Carolyn frequently comment on the Formula One industry for television, including many stations, including the BBC, Bloomberg, Channel 4, CNBC, CNN, and ITV. Formula Money was launched way back in 2007 as the trade guide to Formula One, containing more than 300 tables and diagrams, including the breakdown of every team's sponsorship deal, all race hosting fees, and the total resources of each team. Since then, Formula Money has provided data and consultancy to many F1 sponsors, circuits, teams, and race promoters. Christian Silt, welcome to the show. How are you this evening?
Very well, thanks. Good to be on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here and appreciate you spending time with us. I know that there's a lot of things going on around the world and quite few of them seem to be good nowadays, but not as it may, there is plenty of going on in the world of Formula One. And of course, there are a lot of things that need to be considered, considering this pandemic-induced global recession that's going on. And of course, no one is immune to it at the moment, and certainly Formula One is not immune to it either. So there are a number of areas that I wanted to talk to you about tonight, but let's just back it up a couple of weeks, if we could, or even a little bit further back, because before the crisis unfolded over the past couple of months here with the COVID-19 pandemic, there were already a number of interesting things going on in the world of Formula One, with the new technical regulations, which took an eternity to finally become agreed upon by all the different teams. And then, of course, the Concorde Agreement is up at the end of the year and all the discussions about that. So, Chris, I'd just like to get an idea of what sort of footing Formula One was on financially on the business side before this all unfolded.
Yeah, I mean, I think things were, generally speaking, looking up. I mean, as you say, they'd agreed the technical regulations, which were due to come into effect, of course, next year, and now it's at least 2021, well, 2022 really, and then possibly 2023. So they'd been agreed, and then obviously the budget cap, which is still due to come into effect next year, had been agreed, and really I think they were down to deciding how much money the teams would be really receiving as prize money, and that would determine whether or at least who would be signing up to next year, because of course all of the team's contracts expire at the end of this year. I mean, there was largely been understood that the everybody had signed up and everything had been agreed and been given the green light, basically. But I understood just before all of the coronavirus came to light, I understood that certain key teams were still in two minds about whether to continue. And then, of course, obviously, you had the pandemic that outbreak, basically the coronavirus outbreak, and really then that's taken priority since then.
Absolutely. And it is very interesting here to hear some of the different comments coming around from the different teams. And earlier today, Zach Brown, CEO of McLaren, says that he really believes that there has to be further reductions in the cost cap for 2021. And the exact term that he used, that the teams that are not willing to go along with that are what he says, quote, playing with fire. So the number that the teams have agreed to reportedly is to go down from $175 million down to $150, but Brown and others are actually trying to push that down as low as maybe even $125 million. Is there how do you assess that, Chris?
I mean, I think there are two issues that are pretty central at the minute, and one of them is teams, but the other one, which is equally important, are the race organizers, the promoters, as they're known in the trade. If you've not got any or obviously enough teams, you can't host a race. But by the same token, if you've not got any race organizers, you can't host a race. And the race organizers, we wrote an article recently, the race organizers are in a very difficult position, many of them, because they have to essentially start committing to signing contracts and entering into contracts, basically, and pushing the button, basically, on preparations for their race as far forward as 6 months in advance. So if you think about it now, we're just really the early April. So you have April, May, June, July, August, September, 6 months away. So any race that's in September or thereabouts, you know, the end of August, maybe mid-August to mid-September and onwards, they're going to have to start pushing the button right now on signing contracts with for temporary grandstands. Even permanent circuits use temporary grandstands because they have an increase in spectator numbers for a Grand Prix, Formula One Grand Prix. So they have to start signing up, basically entering into agreements to supply with suppliers for temporary grandstands, for security, for extra stuff. And there are two problems, really. What happens is usually they're covering those costs or allocating, you know, the money for those costs will be coming from advanced ticket sales. So they'll sign an agreement right now for temporary grandstands, which could cost as much as, you know, $10 million, something like that, $5, $10 million. And that they'll be comfortable to do that, the race organizers, because they will have got at least $5 or $10 million in from advanced ticket sales. Well, at the minute, we've spoken to several ticket agencies, the ticket sales are ground to a complete halt because fans don't know if they're going to be allowed to travel internationally. If you've got international or even nationally in some cases, they don't know if the race will take place. They don't know if they're going to have enough money to buy the tickets. They don't know if they're going to need the money they've got for other things. And they don't know if they're going to be comfortable being in a big crowd. So ticket sales have literally ground to a halt. So the race organizer doesn't have the money really in terms of coming in to fund preparation for the track. And at the same time, the race organizer doesn't know if his race is actually going to be able to take place when it's got its scheduled date in September, because they don't know whether the situation, the outlook is going to be better or worse by then. So the race organizers are in an incredibly difficult position. And as you've seen, basically, as the calendar gets closer, the races are just dropping off. The most recent one was Canada. So, you know, without the races, where do you go? I mean, they've talked about having races behind closed doors, in other words, no spectators. There are two problems with that. Problem number one is what we saw in Australia, is that actually what put the brakes on the race was not a case of coronavirus from in the spectators, it was somebody in the paddock. So that would still be a problem or a risk. So there's problem number one. And problem number two is that the ticket sales is what the organisers use to cover their running costs. So if there are no ticket sales, it's not clear to me, and from conversations I've had recently with race organisers, they're not clear yet as to how they would actually cover their costs. So, as I said, no races, you know, it doesn't really matter whether the teams are ready or not. I mean, the issue with the teams is actually quite it's simpler, really, to get your head around. That's very simple. I mean, what Zach is saying quite rightly is that 175 million budget cap is just not going to be workable, because if teams are spending some, if teams are allowed to spend that, in the event that one or two of them might have the resources to do so, it's just going to price everybody else out of the equation, because the vast majority of companies and individuals are not going to want to spend anything close to that much on a sport, really, in going forward, you know, because of the due to the strong likelihood of a deep recession. So really, to entice people into Formula One, and actually, if teams go under, to get new owners in, you'll need a budget cap that's far, far lower than 175 million. So really, that's his point, and the teams at the minute are debating that. But as I said, really, I mean, even if they do manage to get there, you know, to get that to the finish line at a much lower level, it kind of doesn't matter if there are no races, because that's a more significant problem in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chris, you made a couple of statements in there that I want to try and unpack and discuss a little bit further. And one of them, I think, is quite interesting. And that was one that you just briefly touched on, of course, was the idea of running races behind closed doors. Now, of course, you were saying that a lot of the money, the revenue that that the organizers is generated from the ticket sales, from people attending the entire race weekend from the Thursday to the Sunday, or maybe any one individual day. But are you aware of any mechanism in the agreements that that there are that would be able to maybe, I don't know, channel revenues from TV numbers, from viewership that way to the organizers? Is that even possible?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'd have to do that in some fashion or another, because the way that it works at the minute in broad terms is that the you have most of the races, the vast majority of them are funded by local states. So it's local, state or federal governments. And they will, the governments will pay the average, the average hosting fee for Formula One race is $28 million. The governments will pay that to Formula One, which is owned by Liberty Media. So they'll cover the fee. And then the ticket sales cover the running costs of a race, which, you know, for a street race is much higher, because they have to build much more, many more temporary grandstands and transform the city streets into a racetrack. So they can be, you know, $50 plus million to arrange. Whereas a permanent track, even though they'll still need temporary grandstands and extra stuff for the race, that can be as low as, you know, $20-30 million. Still a lot of money for a to host a race, and that's covered by ticket sales. So if there are no ticket sales, then where are they going to host, get their where are they going to cover their costs? How are they going to get the money to cover their costs? I mean, there are two options there. Option number one is that the state would, or the local state or federal government would pay the track, and the track would use the money from the state to cover their costs, and Formula One wouldn't get a fee and would just have the broadcasting revenue, or the alternative is that they get the fee and they give the race host a cut of the broadcasting revenue. So I mean, they're the two options, and obviously Formula One has sponsors around the track, so they could give the race hosts a cut of the sponsorship revenue. So I mean, they're the two options, really. I mean, I think that it's difficult really to see how, you know, how that would, what the business would look like under those circumstances, because the race fees are somewhere in the order of $600 million annually, so, and that's out of a $2 billion revenue. So, you know, you'd be talking about at least really a third of the business being just eroded away in terms of a revenue position. It is important to keep the TV going, because the TV broadcasts is really, that's why the governments pay the money in terms of the host to cover the hosting fee, because they're getting TV exposure for their country, which essentially drives tourism and puts their country on the map. So they have to keep the TV, and then the TV obviously just drives sponsorship, etc. But I mean, ultimately, it would still be losing a huge chunk of money.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's something else I thought that was a little bit interesting as well, just building on the idea of these behind closed door races. And that has been this phenomena over the past several weeks of these virtual Grand Prix. We saw not the Oz GP, not the Bahrain Grand Prix. Yep. And then this past weekend was supposed to be the inaugural race in Vietnam at the new track in Hanoi. Obviously, that was postponed. So they put on another virtual Grand Prix, which was basically a rerun of Australia, and it was quite interesting. I just happened to be scrolling through my phone on my Facebook feed, and I happened to see the live video feed. I don't know what the final numbers were, but I noticed at one point when I was watching, there was somewhere in the neighborhood of about 35,000 people watching this virtual Grand Prix at I think it was at one point, and it was a reduced thing. It wasn't the full race distance. It was about 30 laps, but it just goes to prove that. Well, I mean, esports is a completely different thing. I have a friend that works for EA Sports, and he's involved in the FIFA game and all that. But it is an interesting phenomenon of its own. But I was thinking, if you can generate that sort of interest in just in esports with Formula One drivers and other well-known esports drivers and other personalities getting involved, I was wondering myself, well, if they could actually get to a situation where it would be safe, because like you said, the Australian Grand Prix really was canceled when it all started to kick off after the one team member at McLaren tested positive for coronavirus. But having said that, if we got to a point where international travel was all right again, and there was some way to airlock or insulate the teams and their personnel and the drivers and keep them safe, I really wonder how much of a desire there would be to watch races behind closed doors. Obviously, it wouldn't be the same, especially if you had the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, and the Tifosi are a crucial part of the atmosphere at that race, for example. But I think that there would be a lot of interest in it. I think that if they could resurrect the World Championship to some extent, I know that the current agreement was they need a minimum of 8 races on 3 continents, but I'm sure that if there was some way to get the season going, I'm sure that there would be some sort of way that they could agree, even in a temporary measure, to push something through and have a modified calendar, even if they could only hold it on one continent or whatever it might be. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. No, I mean, I mean, yeah. And I think with the number of continents that they're meant to have to be able to be classed as a world championship, that's, from what I can gather, that's actually not essential, because Formula One, there seems to be a waiver for, it's set by the F1's governing body, the FIA, and there seems to be the provision for a waiver of that clause if the series in question has hosted world championships for many, many, many years, which Formula One has. So I don't think they'd need to be on three continents. But I mean, it just really, I think there's an element of professionalism that needs to be adhered to. So, I mean, if they want to call it a world championship with five races at Silverstone, backwards, forwards, left, right, whatever, I mean, and then two other countries, I mean, it could look a little bit amateur. That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen some of these alternative theories as well. Yeah. And I believe that, first of all, Silverstone, if they wanted to do that, I believe they're only sanctioned to run races in one direction.
That's
so
right.
There'd have to be some sort of modifications to their license to allow them or permit them to do that. Mm-hmm. But it really is interesting because there was I did see something earlier today that that Ross Brawn is trying to target a some form of a 19 race season at some point. I don't know how this is even going to be possible, even behind closed doors. I suppose there was a couple of ideas that were thrown out there, like 2-day race weekends and the things like that, and pushing the season maybe into the beginning of 2020. And obviously, well, with maybe a freeze on the technical regulations and all team staff being furloughed. And I mean, basically, if they carried this year's formula into 2021, then maybe there is flexibility. To run a condensed modified schedule in some form.
I mean, maybe. I think it's unknown, really. That's the problem at this stage. There's no way of telling. I mean, as I said, they're going back to about the lack of hosting fees, which is what you would have, really. I mean, ultimately, if there are no spectators, either the governments have to pay the circuits to run the race and cover their hosting fees, or Formula One has to give the circuits the equivalent amount that it would normally be getting from ticket sales. And ultimately, it's going to come to really somewhere in the order of, as I said, 600 million. The problem with that is that Formula One is losing that money. As the rights holder, Liberty Media, and the biggest loser from that is the teams, because the teams share in 70% of Formula One's profits as prize money. So, how could the teams be sustainable under that model? That's the difficulty. That's the difficulty. So, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been several people coming out in the past several days. Zach Brown was one of them. Jean Todt, president of the FIA, just warning about the financial situation and the possibility that several teams could actually disappear from the grid.
Yeah,
one would have to assume that it might be some of the smaller teams that always seem to be a bit on the cusp when it comes to having sufficient funds. I mean, we know in the past several years, prior to the injection of Lawrence Stroll and his consortium that rescued Force India and then rebranded them into Racing Point. That's one situation. I mean, we had Haas over the past several weeks, just that's a bit of an open secret, it seems to be, whether or not they want to continue in Formula One, whether it's not, still worthwhile for them to stay in the sport. But how accurate do you think is Brown's speculation that as many as four teams could disappear from the grid?
No, I think that's very, very likely. I mean, and that's I think to me that's at the bare minimum. I mean, I think that's extremely likely. I mean, what probably hasn't yet sunk in to a lot of the teams and perhaps some of the other stakeholders in Formula One is that if the recession, the economic crisis, is as bad as is being said, I mean, there's just no place for a sport that's going around the world racing 20 times a year and spending hundreds or billions in total of billions of dollars doing so. I mean, people aren't going to be comfortable in big crowds aren't sure if they can travel, won't sure if they'll have the money to travel. I mean, there's just far too many risks and uncertainties there.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainties. And just a situation that I don't know, is maybe not received enough coverage at the moment, is the fact that Lawrence Stroll has just invested a massive amount of money. It was about £500 million into Aston Martin.
Yeah.
What is the latest on that situation? I mean, obviously, everything's up in the air at the moment, but still to inject that amount of money at this point, what is your opinion? What's your analysis on that situation, Chris?
Well, I mean, what wasn't widely picked up is the fact that he had an initial agreement, and I can't remember what the figures were, but that agreement after the onset of the coronavirus, the original agreement was torn up, and basically he's getting double the original amount, from what I remember, for the same amount, because its shares fell even more after the outbreak. So I think he's going to end up with 25% of the company, but I could be wrong. I mean, I don't follow that closely the car, the detailed developments day to day with the car manufacturers. So, I mean, but the fact of the matter is he's got going to have a lot of money tied up in that. But then again, Formula One apparently is at the heart of that plan, so he's going to want to keep the team, but obviously that still is going to depend on how many cars Aston Martin may be able to sell in future.
Pardon me, I was just going to say, I know you were just saying that you haven't really followed the situation with the road car side of the business all that closely, but do you have any idea what sort of financial ground that they were on? I know that they weren't maybe as solid as one might think, but perhaps maybe that's just my own perception of the name Aston Martin, and maybe that has colored my opinion of it. But do you have any idea of where they were financially before all this?
Yeah, I mean, and they weren't doing well. I mean, I think the problem was just simply the poor sales, basically, in terms of Aston Martin. And obviously, there's a lot of competition in that sector, but,
yeah,
you know, in Mercedes, et cetera, and Jaguar, et cetera. So, I mean, the share price had collapsed, and that's when Lawrence Stroll came in. I think that that was all before the virus. So, I mean, I think the current economic climate really just calls into question any of the projections that he made or anybody made about that company, and pretty much any company. I mean, as I said, it's, you know, we're in a situation where in 2008, when there was the financial crisis then, and for example, in Formula One, you had the exodus of car manufacturers, which is Toyota, Honda, BMW, Renault, etc. They all left because of the financial crisis. Now, when there was the financial crisis, they still had their dealerships open. But I mean, you're in a situation at the minute where car manufacturers aren't even allowed to have dealerships open. They're not here in the UK anyway, so they just simply can't even sell cars. So I don't know how or when they would be able to kind of like kickstart their companies again and begin to get the wheels in motion again. Nobody knows. So I don't see how it will be possible to predict and forecast what sales would be in the scenario when they're able to recommence business. We just don't know when that'll be, let alone what it will look like.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the situation, I mean, it changes almost hourly, definitely daily for all of us. It doesn't matter. I mean, you're in the UK, I'm here in Canada. I mean, everybody, I mean, there's a global audience that listens to this show, and it is so fluid and changing so rapidly. It's impossible to really look and see, well, what are we going to do next week, let alone what's going to happen next month. But I just wanted to look now just at the leadership portion of Formula One. Obviously, Chase Carey and Liberty Media have been in the controlling seat, in the driver's seat, pun intended, of Formula One for the past several years. But a couple of weeks ago, just in the fallout and the aftermath of the cancellation of the Australian Grand Prix, Bernie Ecclestone came out and said that he would have just flat out cancelled the 2020 season. Now, I know that Bernie is not a fellow that is, he's definitely not shy to say what is on his mind, and in the past has made some rather, you know, controversial and quite blunt statements. But is it really as easy as that to come out and say, I would just go out and cancel the entire situation? Or is it very much the situation that Liberty and Carey find themselves in, just evolving just like the situation in every other aspect of life at the moment?
It's a difficult question. I mean, I think the point is that if you cancel the season and had detailed discussions with the teams about how much they needed to survive in terms of how much money they needed to survive until next year, then provided you that money can be allocated from Formula One's resources or and or the owner's resources, then you can keep the team's wheels turning. The flip side of the coin, and that's not what Liberty is doing. Liberty is saying we're going to try and get the season running again. Well, if that actually ends up causing more damage, whether it's not necessarily financial, but it could be reputational, maybe that's because there ends up being an outbreak again in the paddock that's more significant and serious, or maybe it's because teams, drivers are reluctant to go to the races, for example, something that hasn't really been raised much. Maybe the drivers won't be happy about turning up to the races. Maybe it's because, as I said, that when they go to the races, if they're behind closed doors, there just simply won't be enough money to cover to justify the cost of going there. So, you know, that's a possibility. I mean, if this kind of situation ends up causing more damage, let's say, than good by actually having the races, that's the risk that's being run versus the other situation where there's no racing at all, as other sports have decided to take that route and just basically make sure that the teams are secure. That's, I think, what Bernie was suggesting.
Now, I've got a bit of an interesting follow-up question for this. One of the things that has been implemented is by Formula One is that they've extended this factory shutdown, and a lot of the teams have furloughed their staff for the time being. In the grand scheme of pictures, how significant in terms of savings and to payroll and other R&D costs and just normal operating costs, how much does that help the teams by enforcing this shutdown, similar like we'd see in a normal year in the summer break that we typically see in the beginning of August?
I mean, the difficulty really, I think, is that this isn't a comparable situation, because you would normally have the teams would normally be able to bank on revenue coming in from sponsors, revenue coming in from prize money being the key sources. I mean, then they also get payments from their owners, but they're the two external sources of revenue, prize money and sponsorship. But at the minute, they can't guarantee on either of those coming in. So, I mean, if you don't really, let's say, I mean, in an extreme case, if you have zero revenue, it doesn't matter how high or low your costs are, unless they go to zero, which they're not, you're always going to be making a loss. So, I mean, that's the problem. It's that it's not so much, the teams are saving money by not racing, because they are. The problem is that there's no visibility on where their revenue is going to come from.
Okay, well, yeah, that makes very, very good sense, and I completely understand that point of view. It is so interesting. It is tough. I mean, when we fall and find ourselves in this word unprecedented has been used almost to the point of it's losing its relevancy, but at the same time, it is accurate, because it is a situation that has not been seen definitely in modern times, and it is very, very difficult for everyone. But I did notice, I think it was last week, that you'd done some analysis for Forbes magazine, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of this is speculative, because we don't know when we're going to come out on the other side of this and when restrictions might gradually start to be eased and normal life and the economy can get up and running again. But just based maybe the most recent and current information, just from the business side, how do you expect Formula One is poised to maybe recover once the economy gets up and running again?
I mean, that's a tricky one, because I think it's going to depend on what Formula One looks like at that time. And as we discussed at the outset, I mean, there's a very real chance that it'll look completely different to what it was before. Not visually so much, but just in terms of the financial landscape. I mean, if you've got teams that are running on budgets that are 50% of what they were previously, I mean, it's going to be completely different. You know, running perhaps at races with no spectators for maybe the next year, if they can even get them off the ground, perhaps running at four different races and, you know, three or four races on the same track. I mean, that may not be appealing to people, to spectators, TV, television viewers. I mean, you know, if you've got the same track hosting four different races, who knows if TV viewers will be interested in that. I think that's the real problem. We don't know. And that is unprecedented, again, to use that word. But I mean, that's a fact. If they start doing that, there's a real risk that the popularity of the series could just go through the floor.
Yeah, and that really is the question is that until we get some sort of clarity and some sort of understanding where everything is going to go, and once we have some concrete answers, that a lot of this just is speculation and just trying to gaze into the literal crystal ball for some answers that nobody really has at the moment. But Chris, I really appreciate you joining me here this evening. And do you have any final thoughts to add before I let you go?
No, I mean, I think really this is just it's too uncertain, to be able to make any kind of definite statement as to really even the direction things are going. We just don't know at this stage, so we'll have to see over the next month or two, really, to work out where it seems to be heading. And then we can maybe talk again.
Very much watch this space. Well, Chris, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can follow you on social media and where they can find your work online.
Sure. No, we're at Formula Money. That's Twitter handle, Formula Money, all one word. And then it's formulamoney.com.
Christian Silt, thank you so very much, and I wish you all the best. Pleasure. Take care of yourselves, and we'll talk again soon.
Looking forward to it, and thanks very much. Good to talk.
It was my pleasure, and I really look forward to talking to you again very, very soon. Okay, time now for a very quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, well, welcome back to Scuderia F1 here on the Overtime Media Network. And many thanks again to Christian Silt from Formula One Money, who joined us in the previous segment. And before we get into the news, which I want to go back and touch on a couple of stories that Christian and I talked about before the break here. But before we do that, I just want to mention that Bob Varsha, who's a very well-known and very well-respected commentator and broadcast host here in North America in U.S. motorsport, he has tested positive for coronavirus, and this is real shock. Bob was a commentator for a Speed Channel, as well as ESPN, CBS, ABC, Fox Sports, and he's been doing so for as long as I can remember. Anyways, Bob, again, this is it's like a double whammy. Earlier this year, he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. He was undergoing chemotherapy, and as many of you know, that individuals that are battling cancer, when they go through chemo, it does really damage one's immune system. Anyways, people like that, a lot of them have become very susceptible to coronavirus. And Bob has contracted it, and he's been in quarantine ever since. And it is terrible news. Really sad to hear that. And of course, our thoughts, our prayers go out to Bob and his family and all his loved ones, that he makes a complete and full recovery on both kind of fronts from coronavirus and cancer very, very soon. I had a nice email from Bob. It was a couple of years ago now. He reached out out of the blue, actually, which was I was really a nice surprise, and shared a very nice story that he had about Phil Hill. Anyways, let's just to go on. There's a couple of other coronavirus stories here that I want to talk about. And one of them involves ex-McLaren chief Ron Dennis, who earlier this week announced a new initiative to help frontline health care workers in the United Kingdom during the pandemic. And Dennis, he was literally Mr. McLaren for decades. He was the boss there from 1981 until 2017. And he's in charge of this new initiative called SaluteTheNHS.org, and that's going to provide high-quality meals to NHS workers for the next couple of months. So it's really cool. The meals that they're going to be making available to these healthcare workers, specifically to ICU teams, anesthetic teams, and A&E staff during their shifts, when they're unable to leave clinical areas under the current health protocols to help combat the spread of COVID-19. Anyways, Dennis and his family have donated 1 million pounds £1 million to the initiative, which also has support from other companies, including Tesco's, Absolute Taste, and Yodel. So that's absolutely fantastic. Great to hear that. Anyways, Dennis had to say, quote, "This is a time when all of us, individuals and businesses alike, need to stand up and be counted in the effort to combat COVID-19. We're all in this together. I am delighted to be leading this initiative to help ensure that vital NHS workers have nutritious meals while they work every hour in this fight. It means they have one less thing to worry about. We have called this SaluteTheNHS.org because I think we are all in awe of the work they are doing to save lives. This is a huge logistical effort to build major professional food delivery operation almost from scratch in a week. I've been so impressed by the fantastic things we have achieved together so far, but we are going to need the support from others as well as ongoing donations to keep this whole operation going." Absolutely brilliant stuff. Glad to see that. And like everyone else, I am in absolutely awestruck and impressed at the amazing things that healthcare workers around the world are doing in battling COVID-19 and treating people that have fallen ill. It is it is absolutely awe-inspiring. I can't say thank you enough to all the healthcare workers everywhere that are doing their best to take care of us and keep us all safe. Anyways, sticking on this theme, Mercedes have repurposed their F1 facility in Brixton to help build for the production of breathing aids to assist COVID-19 patients. Excuse me. And this was what we talked about last week, the CPAP machines that they went and basically built. They reversed engineered and improved upon the design and got a workable model in less than 100 hours, which is mind boggling, but just a really cool thing to see, and just demonstrates the power and the ingenuity and the amazing things that Formula One can do in and outside of the pit lane. The high-performance powertrain worked with engineers from University College London to reverse engineer these CPAP machines, and they got NHS approval last week. And the device, which is otherwise known as the UCL Ventura, has undergone evaluations at University College Hospital and other London hospitals, and the UK government has placed an order of 10,000. That's an astonishing number. Anyways, a press release from Mercedes had the following to say, quote, "After a UK government order for up to 10,000, the devices are being produced at a rate of up to 1,000 a day at the HPP Technology Centre in Brixworth, Northamptonshire. Currently, 40 machines that would normally produce F1 pistons and turbochargers are being used for the production of the CPAP devices, and the entire Brixworth facility has been repurposed to meet this demand," end quote. Again, no words, I'm just extremely impressed and grateful that such a thing can be done in such a short amount of time and able to produce the numbers of these devices that are required. It's really good to see. Let's move on to this is what we were talking about a little bit earlier with Christian, and this is Ross Brawn, who was talking about possibly holding 19 races behind closed doors if Formula One gets a season up and running. And Brawn, he was speaking earlier this week to the Sky Sports F1 vodcast, and he had the following to say, quote, "Obviously, travel for the teams and travel for everyone involved is going to be one of the big issues. You could argue that once we get there, we could be fairly self-contained. Our view that probably a European start will be favorable and could even be in a closed event. We would be a very enclosed environment where the teams would come in on charters. We would channel them into the circuit. We make sure everyone is tested, cleared. There is no risk to anyone, and we have a race with no spectators. That's not great, but it's better than no racing at all. I think we have to remember there are millions of people who follow the sport sat at home. A lot of them are isolating, and to be able to put on a sport, keep the sport alive, and entertain people would be a huge bonus with the crisis we have, but we can't put anyone at risk. We're looking at the organizational structure that would give us the earliest start, but also the ability to maintain that start. There's no point having a start and then stopping again for a while and then having another start. I think it's most likely to be in Europe, and it's conceivable it could be a closed event," end quote. Yeah, well, I mean, I think that that's the big thing, right? Is you're going to get all these people to come, and that is the big thing. I mean, as Christian said, it wasn't so much that it was a member of the public that tested positive for a coronavirus in Australia, but it was one of the team members. Now, that was just the way that it worked out, and that doesn't really mean anything. It's just the way that the situation was. But again, the thing is, and the way that it's been explained here by our health authorities in Canada, is that we're just in the first wave, and until a vaccine or a cure comes along, that this is just going to be the one of probably two or perhaps even three waves of coronavirus over the next year or so, until they're able to develop this vaccine or enough of the world population becomes immune to it and has the antibodies to fight it off. Again, I don't know. I'm not going to try and explain it because I don't completely understand it fully myself. I'm just trying to recount it as best I can. Anyways, he did go on when he was asked by Martin Brundle why Formula One has not been able to announce any new dates while other racing series have. Braun went on to say that it's just the nature of Formula One, and it's just a lot more intricate and complex than other sports. Anyways, he had the following to say in that follow-up question to, quote, "Our season is longer than most of the other racing series. Canada has just been canceled. If we included Canada, we'd have to revise the calendar again. So we felt it was better to wait until the situation stabilized before we present the calendar. That's been an awful lot of work done. Eight races is actually the minimum we could have a world championship within the FAA statutes. We could achieve eight races by starting in October. So if you wanted to drop that point, that would be October. But then there's always the possibility we could run into next year. That's assuming we finish this year, and that's being explored. Can we strain to January to finish the season? There are all sorts of complications you can imagine with that. If we were to start in the beginning of July, we could do a 19-race season. Tough. Three races on, one weekend off, three races on, one weekend off. But we've looked at all the logistics, and we think we can hold an 18 to 19-race season if we are able to get started in July. So the choice is anything between those two numbers," end quote. And again, because the situation is so fluid and changing so rapidly, it really is a question of, well, when do we get anybody get the go-ahead and the all clear? And again, once things start ramping up, it's going to be slow. And if there's additional outbreaks, you know, we might have to roll things back again. But it doesn't hurt to plan, and it you have to have some contingency, because we just can't shut everything down. Life, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your point of view, does have to continue it in some manner. It's just it's a difficult situation, obviously, and it's just drawing that line and really doing it in the most responsible way, because of course, when it comes to playing with the health and safety of people, you have to err on the side of caution, and in this case, we have to err on the side of extreme caution. Anyways, Ross Brawny did have to say that as well in another interview. He said that Formula One has to balance the risk and economic impact to decide on the start of the season. And again, this was when he was talking to Martin Brundle, and he said, quote, "Obviously, we have to follow government guidelines, but I think people are going to have to go back to work at some point, and I don't know if this thing is 100% up, cleared up until we do that. If we wait until it's 100% cleared up and a vaccine has been invented and everyone's been vaccinated, what point in the time in the future is that? So there will be some degree of judgment involved when it is fair and correct for people to go back to work, for people to engage in things that they did before, perhaps with a lot more precautions than they took before," end quote. And, you know, that is a very interesting bit of insight. I was just on a bit of a side note. It was interesting. One of the other things that I do, and I've referred to it occasionally on the program here, is that I do a lot of coverage for Vancouver Whitecaps FC, who play in Major League Soccer. And I was in on a Zoom conference with several of my media colleagues and a couple of the players from Whitecaps FC earlier this week. And it was a bit of a weird, surreal situation. I mean, a lot of these other journalists, I mean, they're friends, they're colleagues. I mean, we associate away from matches and training and things like that. But it was kind of strange sitting down with a couple of the players, everybody at home, or wherever they were, and to see the players just dressed in just regular clothes. I mean, usually like professional athletes, they're in their training kits or after the match, or you know, or sometimes you catch them coming in and out of matches and they're in a suit and tie and all that. So to see these guys just in a sweatshirt and not as polished as they usually were, it was a bit surreal. And just to sort of talking about things and just the situation and just how they were coping with it personally, and how they're keeping in shape and how they're keeping connected with their teammates and their friends and their families and all that. It really was a bit of a strange situation. And it just it sort of struck me at that point that, you know, when one of my media colleagues asked them about, well, what do you think about, you know, getting prepared for the start of the season that may start at some point? And of course, we don't know when and if that's going to happen this year. And and that it sort of just really struck me as just the strangeness of it all, and the fact that everything really is up in the air in the moment. And of course, that dovetails nicely into everything that we're talking about in Formula One here. It really is a very strange period of time to be experiencing, and just a very strange situation. And the fact is that no matter where you are, what walk of life you come from at the moment, we really are all in this together, and nobody has not been impacted by this in one way or another. And honestly, if the worst thing to happen to us is just to be inconvenienced and having to stay at home and not be able to watch a motor race or a football match or whatever it might be, then of course that is the best case scenario for hopefully all of us. Unfortunately, that's not going to be the case in every circumstance. Anyways, time for one final break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, just a couple more pieces of news before we start to shut it down for this week. And just sticking with the idea of races being canceled and rescheduled and put on at some point, Jan Lammers, who's the sporting director for the Dutch Grand Prix, says the organizers of the Zandvoort race have not considered the option of putting on a race behind closed doors. And Lammers said that he would prefer actually delaying the race, the re-inaugural Dutch Grand Prix, because it was this year was going to be the first Dutch Grand Prix since, what, 1984, 1985? So a long time ago. Anyways, he did say that they actually preferred delaying the event until next year in 2021 if it meant that fans can attend the race. And they said it's just because it's you know, it just would not be the same. Anyways, Lammers had the following to say, quote, "A race without fans is an unthinkable scenario. If you have a race, it has to be without compromise. You have to be able to celebrate. For us, it's about the return of Formula One after 35 years. That should be a great party you want to celebrate with everyone. If we are being asked that question, we will have to think seriously about it. A race without fans is not something we want to think about until we're being asked that question. Fortunately, that hasn't happened yet. As far as we're concerned, though, it's just not possible." Anyways, yeah, you can understand that. And again, as we were talking about earlier in the show, it really would be weird. But again, at the end of the day, I think that that once we get out of this situation and life starts to return to normal, as things start to get rolling again, I think we all have to consider alternative approaches to getting back to where we were. And of course, it's not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to be just as easy as just flipping a switch and just expecting everything to be as it was a couple of months ago. It's just not going to be like that, unfortunately. Anyways, you can understand, you know, why Lammers and the organizers of the Dutch Grand Prix would want to rather postpone rather than hold the race behind closed doors. It would be strange, but who knows? It could be an option. It is kind of interesting, though. Like I have been watching a couple of these virtual races that they've had in recent times, and you know, there is an element of excitement to it. Of course, it helps when you have Formula One drivers involved in it, like Charles Leclerc. You had Alex Albon. You had both Williams drivers, and I think it's cool. I mean, there's recognizable names in there. You had Stoffel Vandoorne, reserve driver at Mercedes, and he drives in their Formula E team. Of course, he was in Formula One with McLaren for a couple of years. It would be cool too. I mean, to get some of the top tier guys in there, like besides Charles Leclerc. And Charles, obviously, if you watched that race last weekend, virtual race that is, that Charles apparently is just as good as virtual racing as he is in a real car, which is good news or bad news depending who you are. But his brother Arthur Leclerc was also involved, as well as a bunch of well-known sim drivers as well. So I found it quite enjoyable. I mean, I was only watching on my phone. It's not quite the same as a real race, of course, but it Formula One 2019, that's a game that that I play quite a bit, quite a lot at the moment, actually. So it is interesting and kind of fun to watch guys that that are, you know, in theory a lot better than me doing it, although Johnny Herbert probably not so much. Poor old Johnny was right around at the back of the pack, but I guess from what I did understand is he got his rig only a couple of days previous to that, so he was obviously getting up to speed to it. But it is something. It is some form of entertainment, and that is not to say that we should ignore everything that's going on in the outside world, but it is, I think, for the sake of just from a point of view of stress and anguish and our own mental health, that you can't sit there for 24 hours of the day worrying about the health of yourself and your loved ones and money and jobs and everything. There has to be a little bit of a release, a time for something good, because if it's all negative, that in the long run, that's not going to be good for people as well. So it's obviously a question of balance. But you know, again, there are different things that that could happen, but I don't know. It would be nice to see some sort of season get going, and if there was a way to do it safely, I don't particularly have a problem going back to the question about the Dutch Grand Prix. I don't particularly have a problem running races behind closed doors. Of course, I think the big question will come down to each and every race and whether or not it's financially possible or not. But obviously, it would lack the atmosphere of having the fans there. But still, racing's racing, and it would be just good to see some racing on the track. Anyways, just talking about other Formula One drivers and what they had to say about different things on the situation. McLaren driver Lando Norris said that running a race on Silverstone in the reverse format would be cool, but tricky. And he said it's a great opportunity, even if this reverse layout looks tricky. Anyways, he did say in an interview with motorsport.com, he had to say, quote, "Actually been thinking about it and saw on board from someone who tried it in reverse, and it looks different. It looks quite tricky. So you're going to go to Beckett's to Maggot's with the track in reverse. It looks quite tricky and different. I don't know what and how it would play into the racing and stuff, because you have quite a few high-speed corners, which lead on to the straights rather than slow-speed corners. So it might be a bit tricky to overtake, or it may be easy, I'm not too sure, but it would be cool. I think it's more the fact of hopefully having some more British Grand Prix, maybe get some more races at home. It's better for all of us within McLaren, of course myself, to have more home races in a way. And for the British fans, I think they would love a bit more. So yeah, I'm up for it if F1 would allow it, and if Silverstone can do it, then I think it's a great opportunity," end quote. Again, thinking outside the box, definitely what we have to do. Anyways, just a little bit more on just some of the technical side of it. Formula One is considering a token system for 2021 when it comes to car development. And this is possibly could be introduced so that individual Formula One teams can decide which elements of the car they decide to freeze or develop over the next two seasons. Obviously, the long-awaited new regulations, technical regulations that were set to be introduced and launched next year, that's put on ice now for the time being because of all the bigger things going on in the world, and it was going to be tight even under normal circumstances, and just impossible with what's happening right now with the pandemic situation. So it's already been agreed that the current chassis will be frozen for 2020 and 2021 seasons. And also in the past few weeks, teams and Formula One bosses have been discussing what other elements they could also freeze in order to cut development costs in the interim. So, of course, Formula One is always a situation where not everybody can decide on the same thing. And of course, all the teams have different ideas of which parts of the cars that they might like to focus on improving on over this year and the following seasons until the new regulations eventually come into effect for 2022 or 2023, whenever it might be. So anyways, a couple of days ago, they had a conference call involving the team principals and also F1 bosses Chase Carey and Ross Brawn, as well as FIA president Jean Todt. And the idea of a token system actually seemed to be fairly well received and did get some support from those in attendance. So basically, it was agreed that a significant percentage of the overall package will be frozen until the end of next year. And then each of the teams will have a set number of what they're going to call development tokens, which they can deploy in specific areas that they want to change and improve upon in their cars. Anyways, this is something that is not completely unheard of, especially in recent times. And they had a very similar system for power units several years ago when we came into the V6 turbo hybrid era, and each component of the power unit was assigned a token value. So back then, manufacturers were initially allocated 32 tokens per year to use as they wished, and that figure was due to drop to 25 in 2017, down to 20 in 2018, and then 15 in 2019. Anyways, it didn't actually go that way, and they abandoned that token system back in 2017 to allow manufacturers to do whatever development they wished. And this was to help Ferrari, Renault, and Honda catch up to Mercedes. So again, Mercedes was doing such a good job. But anyways, I think it's a good idea. And another cost saving measure that they're looking to adopt maybe for 2020 and 2021 will be tighter FAA aerodynamic testing regulations or restrictions. And these rules cover the use of wind tunnels for aerodynamic R&D. They've also extended the factory shutdown from the current 3 weeks, and that's going to be confirmed as any potential start of the season appears to be going later and later. So that shutdown will probably get pushed back and keep going for a while yet. Anyways, again, when it comes to Formula One, there's always got to be some controversy and some politicking going on. Apparently, Renault still has some questions over what they call the legality of racing points, quote unquote, pink Mercedes. And Renault team principal Cyril Bitaboul says that his team is still what he calls uneasy about the pink Mercedes. And he said a formal challenge on the legality of the racing points carbon copy of the Mercedes from last year is still not out of the question. So anyways, this has been going on for a while. Obviously, when the team showed up to Barcelona for winter testing in the middle of February, which seems an absolutely eternity ago, considering everything that's happened since then. Anyways, when they showed up at Barcelona, they revealed their RP20, which is their car for this year, which was based on last year's Mercedes W10. Anyways, the Racing Point team was absolutely adamant that they'd done nothing outside of the regulations, and some of their rivals were just not very happy about what they called was basically a clone car that it was going to be allowed. Anyways, there were other concerns that were brought up about teams having even closer alliances being made between some of the teams, and that could really hurt some of the teams out there that wanted to remain dependent on that. Anyways, Bitaboul told French channel Canal Plus in an interview earlier this week, they've got a great photographer, that's for sure, but to be fair, I've noticed how that they've quite honestly said that they've copied. I think it's the first time since I joined Formula One that someone has been really proud of copying, like someone who forges artworks being super happy with the work that he's done. Yet it's not the original piece or the pride of working on an original piece. End quote. Yeah, well, I mean, Cyril, I mean, he's not being very Well, he's not beating about the bush, and very interesting that there is a possibility of a legal challenge on the or challenge to the legality of the RP-20, and whether that is allowed under the rules. And also, it's a shame in a way that it's a shame in many ways that the season didn't get underway in Australia several weeks ago, as we'd all hoped to, because one of the things that was very interesting was that dual axis steering system that was unveiled by Mercedes during winter testing. And there was the whole debate on whether or not, even though it was technically legal, it was there was a possibility that that it could violate Parc Fermé rules. And several of the teams said that if they actually deployed it and used it in the Australian Grand Prix, that might have actually resulted in a legal challenge. However, we will never know. And to a certain extent, that's something I wish, I don't wish it, but it would have been interesting to see had they actually used it, the Australian Grand Prix, had that actually gone through, whether any of the teams, the other nine Formula One teams, would have actually protested that. This one final story, this just will not go away. It seems to pop up every couple of weeks. And this is just the whole controversy about the legality of Ferrari's engine last year. Anyways, Jean Todt, FIA president, and obviously someone who has a historical connection to Ferrari, because he was a team principal there during their glory years, during the Schumacher era a long time ago, says that he'd like to release some details about the deal and the controversy that the team had and the sanction that the team was given, but he said he's not able to do so because Ferrari actually won't let him do so. Anyways, he was speaking to motorsport.com earlier this week, and he had the following to say, quote, "If you ask me, I would love to be able to give all the details of the situation, but Ferrari were opposed. So, I mean, they have been sanctioned, but we can give the detail of the sanction. And clearly, we could have said nothing, but we felt it would have been wrong not to say that the Ferrari case had been discussed and there had been sanction. Honestly, it's very simple. Very simple. We have put so much effort to come to our conclusions, which the teams do not agree. Unfortunately, it is very much a fait accompli of technical matters, because our technicians say we cannot for sure demonstrate as much as we should that Ferrari were not legal." End quote. So, yeah, I think it was one of those situations that what's that old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire, obviously there was something going on, but it was maybe just a little bit too difficult to pin down. But however, I mean, it is one of those stories that just hasn't gone away. And like I say, it just seems to pop up from time to time, every couple or several weeks. And I was a little bit surprised to see it. However, I wasn't completely surprised to hear that that there was something funny going on, and that they'd actually been sanctioned, and of course that probably never will see the light of day. Anyways, time to wrap it up there. Thank you all very much for downloading and listening to the show this week. Again, very big thanks to Christian Silt of Formula Money. And again, guys, take care of each other, be good to each other, and stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Talk to you again. Ciao. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.